Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to History Dweebs. I am Tim. Welcome to the podcast where we take a lighthearted look at the dark side of history. And the topic of our podcast today is the mysterious Princess Caribou. Princess Caribou was a young lady who, a homeless young lady who, back in the 17th century, convinced everyone in the town of Almondsbury, England, and also outside of Almondsbury, that she was the mysterious Princess Caribou from the Far East, Brandy. What are your thoughts on that?
If you could convince people of it, more power to you.
Well, you got people convinced it. We got people convinced we're podcasters.
Well, yeah. So, well.
We got people convinced she's the queen of some benevolence place.
So. Some benevolence. Place, yes.
That was a well thought out statement. We are a podcast, a true crime comedy podcast. Well, sometimes true crime, not always true crime. But we do use
rarely comedy, Timmy.
We do use adult language. So if adult language offends
damn right
you,
we do.
If adult
if
language
you offends, catch on fire here and that, just stick around. We got a good tale for you.
If
and Gabby.
If adult language offends you, please check out one of the other fine independently produced podcasts out there, such as our good friends with They Walk Among Us, Already Gone, Insight, and many, many more, Brandy. We have a lot of good friends in podcasting.
Don't talk to strangers, Timmy. We got
Don't Talk to Strangers. We have a lot of podcasting friends who are so much more successful than we are. Brandy, what do you think about that?
I feel like it's Chuck's fault.
Yeah, he's holding us back, Brandy.
It's all politics to me.
It is. Is that how come we never get mentioned on any magazine or online articles that deal with podcasting? We're never mentioned. Is that why?
I never mentioned Timmy.
Maybe because we're not that good. You ever think of that?
No, we're like the Sex Pistols of podcasting, Timmy.
Nice. The punk rock of podcasting. But yeah. You know what? Sex Pistols, people know who they are.
Oh, that's true.
Let me introduce our panel. I am happy to introduce a lady who really needs no introduction. She's she is part of royalty in her own right. The very lovely and talented, a woman who is known throughout the land as Brandy the Benevolent, Her Majesty Queen Brandy the First. How are you, Queen Brandy?
Well, the first. You know, Timmy. Yes, the first, probably the only.
And the last, hopefully.
And the last, yeah. Getting ready for Christmas, so.
You celebrate Christmas, though?
She is not a part of the war on Christmas like you are, Colonel.
That's true.
I'm tired of, we are part of the war on Christmas, Timmy. I declared war on a couple years ago.
How's that working out for you?
As of now, not it's kind of a draw.
You are impending, interrupting Brandy.
Yeah,
impeding Brandy time, Charles.
Oh,
this is Brandy
time. With Brandy time. Okay.
Because I said getting ready for Christmas.
Keep going, devil. Keep going.
Yeah. What else, Brandy? So you're ready for Christmas. Is young Noah ready for Christmas?
Young Noah is so ready for Christmas. He's very, yeah, he's really ready. He's going to make out like bandits. Both my kids are going to make out like bandits this year.
And how about Dave? Did you buy him something nice? Or are you offering him physical pleasure for Christmas?
Yeah.
No, I got him a couple of Yankee candles.
Yankee candles?
They're going to put it. They're going to put it in their tiny house.
Is this one of those things where you buy a gift for him that you want?
No. He has, he's very hard to buy for. My husband, just if he wants something, he just buys it. So he's very difficult to buy for, and he's fairly low maintenance, but.
Perhaps you should go away for a weekend. Maybe that could be your gift to him. I mean, you know, both of you go away. I don't mean just you go away. Of course, that would have been a gift as well.
That would be a big gift, yeah.
Well, we do that every once in a while. Everybody takes a vacation. We all go our separate ways for a week or so, and that's not true. I have the kids, but...
That's the secret to a successful marriage, though.
Oh, for sure.
Is never talking to each other.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, so. Okay, Colonel, do you think that's an appropriate amount of brandy time? Can you think we can move on now?
That's way too much brandy time, Timmy.
Well, let me introduce the star of this podcast, a man who is known as the moral compass of podcasting.
He's the diva of this podcast is what he is. He's a fucking diva.
He was late again today.
I was not late. I was on the phone by 10 o'clock, Timmy.
Well, we were early. Brandy and I were early, and you weren't here.
I was scheduled for 10, Timmy.
He is a man who has been called Brandy an oasis in the desert of despair.
He's not been called that, but what I love is, I get this, he's on his way. From fucking where?
It's a remote podcast.
No, I know, but he's on his way. All he's got to do is pick up his fucking phone.
That's what I mean. It's a remote podcast. He could do it in his car. He can do it on the toilet if he wants.
But no, I get the thing back. Oh, he's on his way. Oh, okay. Well, whatever.
Like, well, he's a very busy man.
Anything going on but him.
You guys, both of you said 10 o'clock. I was here at 10 o'clock.
That's fair. He was here on time. We were just early, Brandy.
But we texted and called him.
When they was doing Goodfellas, do you think they told Robert De Niro, well, we're going to be shooting at 7 a.m., and then called him at 6 a.m. and said, oh, Rob, we're ready for you. Come on down here. No, that's not how it works, Debbie.
Is this one of those, like, I've met Robert De Niro. Robert De Niro is a good friend of mine, and you, sir, are no Robert De Niro.
I do know Robert De Niro, yes.
No.
He calls him Bob.
Bobby.
Mm-hmm. Bobby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He is honorable, the Colonel Charles Beauregard Hawk Walters III, affectionately known as the Southern Gentleman. And I forgot to include her. He's a reverend too, Brandy. A man of God.
Mm-hmm. I am too. So clearly
you're a man of God.
No, you're not.
Oh, I've been ordained. I'm good. Yes, sir.
And we'll see if that gets you into heaven.
I don't believe it took with you, devil.
She's now, if you would say she was a minister in the Church of Satan, Colonel, people would believe that.
Whatever.
Absolutely. A bishop, even.
Mm-hmm.
A cardinal.
The Pope.
The Pope of the Devil Church.
All right. Let's talk about Princess Caribou, shall we?
Yes.
You didn't ask me how I was even doing. Goddamn, we spent right over time. God damn.
Hey, Colonel, how are you doing, Colonel?
I'm not good, Timmy.
It's not good, Timmy.
What's wrong, Colonel?
Christmas, Timmy.
You don't like Christmas.
I'm waging a war. Me and a bunch of other people will wage a war on Christmas, Timmy.
Why are you upset with this wonderful holiday?
I just don't like it, Timmy. I got my normal routine. It just goes, everything's fine. And then all of a sudden, I got three extra people at my house that I'm not even sure who they are.
So the boys are all home?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
not
well,
like
you should
that.
Be happy about that. Have the, all the family together and
they
have
think
some family
it's funny
time.
To remind me how old I am and that I probably won't see another Christmas, so let's enjoy this one.
Well, yeah. They'll feel that way, though. They'll feel that way about you.
One year, they'll be right.
Exactly. That's what I tell them. Then they'll feel bad, and the shame of it is they won't feel bad.
Yeah, because they all knew that going in, that this was your last Christmas together.
Yeah, so we don't...
Because, you know what? You know who you are? You are that crazy fucking World War II guy on soap. The one that still thinks he's in the war. That's fucking you. Do you remember that show?
I remember Soap, yeah. Yeah. Isn't that the... Was that the one that...
All the time. And he was always talking about...
Billy Crystal was in that, right?
Yes.
He was.
Yes. Yeah. And she had... One of them had a dad that's lived with them. And he still thought he was back in, like, World War II. And so he was always bitching about waging a war on this and waging a war on that and dragging around his dead taxidermy dog. That's Chuck.
Ah, okay. I remember Mary Hartman. That was a spinoff, right? From that show.
It was. Yeah.
Yeah, you remember Mary Hartman, right?
I do indeed, Timmy.
All right.
Old.
But, all right, let's move on. Let's talk about Princess Caribou, the mysterious Princess Caribou,
let's do
Brandy.
That to me. She sounds interesting. She sounds enthralling to me.
She's mysterious, girl.
Mysterious, yeah.
The village of Almondsboro is in southwest England.
That's not even the name, is it? Nope. Almondsbury.
Well, whatever.
No, not whatever. It's Clutch.
It has a population of just under 5,000 people, Brandy. Not much happens in this sleepy English village. It was established in 1082. Your thoughts on that, Brandy?
It's a long time ago.
Yes.
It's very old.
I want to move to a sleepy English village, Timmy.
I feel like this is more of a hamlet, don't you?
You think it's a hamlet? I think what's the difference between a village and a hamlet?
I don't know.
Look it up, Colonel.
Now, tell me, you've been to England. Does Offran Leanne, does she live in a big city or a sleepy English village?
She lives in a small town, but I have never been there. But it's a small little place, yeah, I think, in central England.
Have you seen it?
No, I haven't been there yet. I might go, but I haven't been there yet. But in the early 19th century, the village...
She's not Irish, Timmy.
I know. She's not Irish. She is not.
For years, I've been saying a fine...
She's not Japanese either. Huh?
Yeah, but she doesn't have a name that makes you believe she's Japanese.
Oh, I see. You think she is...
false advertising, Timmy.
I see. She's falsely presenting herself as Irish, is what you're saying.
Yes, indeed. Flanagan?
I will talk to her about that. She's got a brand new baby niece.
Yay!
Her young Robin was born just this week.
Cool. Now, Robin is an English name. See, that's true. Like Robin Hood, everybody knows he was English.
True. All right. But in the early 19th century, the village of Almondsbury became the envy of the country, Brandy. When a mysterious woman arrived in the small town, leading locals to believe she was a princess from the Far East.
Hmm.
The woman would become known as Princess Caribou, and she would soon captivate the citizens of Almondsbury with her beauty and strange behavior. I like women who are beautiful and have strange behavior. What?
Yeah. Well, if they're beautiful, it doesn't matter if they have good behavior, strange behavior, bad behavior.
Yeah, but strange behavior, they're kind of freaky.
Yeah, that's true.
That's a plus, Brandy.
That's plus points.
Mm-hmm. Brandy, are you having a Dave ever get freaky?
Really?
No, do you? That's what I'm asking.
Well, I mean, I suppose it depends on your definition of freaky. If you're talking about pulling in, you know, circus little people and... donkeys and whatnot. No, not so much.
Oh, shoot. I thought you was going to have a story to tell. So anyway.
Yeah, you're just not living, devil.
You were kind of leading us on there.
Yeah, you were.
She's a tease, Colonel. She's a tease.
More false advertising, Timmy.
Mm-hmm. Women tease people. You know, they just show up and they walk down the street. They're teasing me, Colonel. They just show up, walk down the street.
It's just shopping.
Just walking.
Yeah.
They want it, Colonel. You know they want it.
They do. They're just not saying it.
All right. So in 1817, an exotic and mysterious woman suddenly appeared in the village of Almesbury, England. On the evening of Thursday, I see I even got the fucking day of the week in this thing. 200 years ago, Colonel, and I've got the day of the week. You got to be impressed with that.
That's pretty goddamn impressive. Right.
Thanks, but he can't get the town's name right.
The town is whatever Timmy calls it, goddammit.
Thank you, Colonel.
Timmy
on Thursday, Brandy, September 12th, 1817, they probably had Thursday night football on.
Oh, for sure.
A young woman wearing a colorful Eastern dress was seen wandering through the sleepy village of Almesbury. I don't know that next word. Near Bristol, which is 8 miles north of Bristol, England. She was wearing a black stuff gown with a muslin frill at the neck, a red and black shawl around her shoulders, and a black cotton shawl on her head.
She's warm.
Goddamn, she was just a black cat away from being a whole witch.
It was black September. It was early September, people, you have to think it's not that cold. She was carried a bundle under her arm containing a few necessities, Brandy, including soap and a few half pennies and a bad sixpence. So like a counterfeit coin or whatever.
Right.
In some of the stories I read, she was carrying soap. The other said that she had soap sewn into her dress. So I don't know which.
So we couldn't really get clarification on that point.
No, there was conflicting reports, Colonel. You know, I always try.
There's a soap controversy going on here.
Yeah, so I like to make that known in case people would, you know, come back later and question my research, because it either she was carrying the soap or she had it sewn into her dress.
Somehow the soap was on her. She had soap.
Yeah. But the soap is no longer relevant to the story. It was just
right.
Just a fact.
They got a goddamn thing. That's research, Timmy.
Thank you.
When you're throwing in things that ain't even got a goddamn thing to do with anything.
I should have checked the weather report for Thursday, September 12th, 1817, though, because then it would made her. Because if it was warm out, and her behavior was even more strange because she was so carefully dressed. Anyway, she was described. Here's a physical description of her. Her head was small and of Grecian character. Brandy, is that the word?
Grecian
character. Her eyes and hair were raven black. Her delicate eyebrows finely arched. She had the nice eyebrows, Brandy. Sounds like her eyebrows were spot on, Brandy.
It does. Sounds like they were on point.
Timmy, I would go so far as to say there was a spliff.
Oh, nice, Colonel. Nice word. And her complexion was of rich coloring of a tropical clime.
So she was tan.
Her small, well-shaped hands indicated...
Oh, I like me some well-shaped hands, Timmy.
Indicate, you know who has well-shaped hands? Michelle Johns. She looks like she has some well-shaped hands.
Michelle Johns has some well-shaped everything, Timmy.
She's very beautiful.
She's going to be the next Mrs. Walters. Everybody knows that.
I know.
No, she's not, because she does God's work, and you are the shit word.
I love Michelle Johns.
You let her speak for herself. She will not be influenced by your bitter, vile...
Oh, she will.
Tongue over that forked tongue woman.
Forked tongue women are very popular. Her small, well-shaped hands indicated both breeding and innocence, Brandy. Innocence of any kind of work.
Right.
Yeah, much like you, Double.
Well, hey, whatever.
She was a trifle below middle height and of the most exotic and elegant figure. Your thoughts on that, Brandy?
She was a short, thick girl with with tan skin and uncalloused hands.
I don't know where you're getting where you got thick from, but Timmy, that's some prose right there. You just
I was just quoting. So,
It wasn't his prose.
I was quoting someone at the time who was describing her. I think a local newspaper or something.
I'm sure a man. Go ahead.
They gave me a bonus, Timmy.
Villagers watched as the woman in her mid-20s, oh, that's perfect age, knocked at the door of the cottage, the home of a village cobbler. Colonel, your thoughts on cobbling as a profession?
Well, oh my God, who the fuck cares?
Cobbler? Cherry he's cobbler?
He's a village cobbler. I don't know if he was peach or cherry. I think he made shoes.
Oh, okay. You know, you just can't find a good cobbler anymore, Timmy.
No, you can't. Okay, Brandy, he's got a point there. If you go on Angie's list, you can't find a cobbler.
You can't find a goddamn cobbler. I had a pair of boots. I took them to get some new soles put on them.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to take the devil to get a new sole put on her, too. But they wanted more than the boots cost to put soles on them.
That's what I mean.
Specialized work.
Fucking cobblers.
Yeah. They could charge whatever they want because there's only a handful of them.
They didn't charge me.
Well,
anything.
I would like to say this. We are anti-cobbler on this podcast. If you're a cobbler, we invite you not to listen to our show.
Yeah. If you're a cobbler, good day.
You, cobbler.
Cobbler, good day. Yeah. Ain't nobody wants no cobblers up in here.
We are willing, Brandy, to make a stand against cobblers.
We will.
And you are.
And even if it costs us, you know, our cobbling listening audience, we are willing to make a stand, right, Colonel?
Goddamn right. And if there's any carriage makers out there, get the fuck out of here. We don't want you either.
Jesus God. Fuckers.
Why don't you go out to the blacksmiths next?
I like blacksmiths. We got a blacksmith that listens to us.
Oh, yeah, we do. We love blacksmiths. Yeah. Anyway, she goes up to this cobbler's house and knocks on his door, and then she starts uttering strange words, Brandy.
Mm-hmm.
She talked in a language that no one could understand, much like myself. But her signs,
she got the magic Timmy.
But by her signs, the cobbler realized that she was asking for food and shelter. So give it, you know, even though we're anti-cobbler, you know, you got to give him credit. He was able to decipher her ramblings to know that she wanted food and shelter.
Well, she was probably shaking her boobs and whatnot to me, like shaking her boobs, pointing to her mouth. Boobs, given sandwich.
Given some bread and milk. She also mimed that she wanted to sleep. However, the cobbler's wife, fucking cobbler.
Oh, the cobbler. You know, the only thing worse than a cobbler is their wife, Timmy. You know, she was a mean woman.
Oh, you know it. Those fucking cobbler's wives. Have you ever read that novel, Brandy, The Cobbler's Wife?
No.
You should sometime. You should sometime.
Yeah, A Cobbler's Maid's Tale.
Yeah. Had you went to a proper university, I would have had to read
exactly.
That.
Yeah. Had you not slept with your English professor, you might have read a book or two.
So anyway, the wife was not happy about letting, Princess Caribou into the home. So she says, no, I'll take her to go see the overseer of the poor. Now, that is another person that we're opposed to on this podcast is overseer of the poor, Brandy.
Yeah. The poor need to be, well, sometimes you got to wrangle the poor, Timmy. You ain't got to oversee them, but you got to wrangle them.
So anyway, my guess what happened, Brandy, is Princess Caribou showed up with her well-shaped hands, and the cobbler's wife says, fuck this, you're not staying here.
Hands. No. I know those hands are for evil. Get those hands out of here, those soft, uncalloused hands. Mm-hmm. And when they're small, they make the thing look bigger, Timmy.
Mm-hmm. She says, I'm going to take you to the overseer of the poor, which she did. And the overseer of the poor was a guy by the name of Mr. Hill, whose job it was to bring anyone suspected of vagrancy before the justice of the peace. Well, that overseer of the poor, he's the man, Colonel, basically.
He is, and we are in favor of the poor on this show, Timmy.
We are. We are.
Well, we don't like blacksmiths, but we're pro-poor.
And we don't like cobblers.
We don't like cobblers.
Peach cobbler.
We don't want people to be poor, but if you are poor,
we're not going to arrest them for vagrancy and take them to the justice of the peace. Exactly. Brandy would do that.
Well,
Brandy probably was an overseer. Have you ever been an overseer of the poor, Brandy?
Not or a that tax collector.
Yeah. Not that I can recall.
Okay, so the overseer of the poor, Mr. Hill, took her to No Park House. That was the home of Samuel Worrell, who was the town clerk of Bristol and a magistrate. So Mr. Hill took her to basically the town cop, right? Judge, whatever. Being kindly people, he was kindly people, him and his wife. His wife, Elizabeth, gave the woman hospitality and tried to discover more about her background, but to no avail, Brandy. I know you didn't take English class, but that means they didn't get anywhere with it. Right, Colonel?
Right. They didn't just didn't make any headway. Did not work, devil, to no avail.
Yeah. At first, it was obvious the woman could not remain at their house. She was a homeless girl with a counterfeit coin in her pocket, Brandy. And it was out of the question for someone in Royale's position, you know, he was the magistrate, to harbor someone who could be a criminal. Because she
harbor,
had this.
Harbor means let you stay there, devil.
Yeah. Yeah, because he was a magistrate, he could not let her stay there because she had some counterfeit coin on her.
That's always sketchy.
However, she made quite an impression on his wife, Elizabeth. And Elizabeth arranged for the woman to be given a room at the local inn called The Bowl, Brandy. That was the name of the inn. And by the way, that inn is still in this little town in England. I looked it up. The Bowl still exists. So if you ever get in Oxford,
I hope they've done some remodeling.
I hope so. If I get over to England to see the lovely Leanne, perhaps I'll stay at the Bowl, Brandy. Your thoughts on that?
I don't. It just reminds me of you yammering about Camilla Parker.
Are you even part of this podcast anymore? would you pay attention, goddammit?
I'm just listening to you two yammer on. I have no thoughts on this. I don't give a shit. Just keep it moving.
We would like, if you don't give a shit, our audience is not going to give a shit. We would love your input, Brandy.
Timmy, when you're doing these scripts from now on, and I enjoy your prose, Timmy, it's
enlightening.
Enlightening. It's very Walden-esque, Timmy.
Thank you.
Into the woods. But you're going to have to dumb it down if you want the devil to be cooperating in here, because she's looking at this kind of with a mouth open, just like, what's that word mean right there? So we're going to have to dumb it down for a little bit. We're sorry, devil. You know what? This is our fault, not yours. Okay?
Your thoughts on that, Brandy?
First of all, you two can suck my dick, because you, Charles, piss and moan and can't, you know, complete a fucking thought to save your ass or stay on track for anything in this world. And Timmy can't pronounce half the shit that he puts on the motherfucking page. So I know what the goddamn words mean, and I can say 99% of them. So let's
Brandy, you seem a little defensive. That's my takeaway from that. How about you, Colonel?
You two seem a bit attacky.
Are you having your period, devil?
It's not Shark Week. No. Okay.
Well, it's a bad time to have it around Christmas.
It is.
You should plan it not to have it around then.
Well, okay.
You need some pomegranates or drink cranberry juice or something.
Well, she needs to plan it out a little better.
Yeah, you do. You know,
there's a lot to be said for period control, right, Colonel?
There is. We're anti-period on this show.
Wait a minute. And again,
here we are. You're ripping at me because I don't know the words. And yet, somehow, we've got on my period.
Well, people are interested in your personal
life. I can't imagine why we're not in Entertainment Weekly every fucking week.
I can't either. It blows my mind.
It does.
So she stays at the bowl. Now, at the time, the bowl had, at the time, botanical prints were the rage, Brandy, and popular in decorative decor. And the wall on the bowl in this little hotel, this little inn, there was a picture of a pineapple. Now, the woman, this mysterious woman, pointed to the picture and said, "Nanas, Nanas," which is apparently Indonesian for pineapple, or at least they thought it was.
Nanas? The effect,
I think it's bananas. They're wrong.
The effect was electrifying, Brandy. The witnesses were convinced that the exotic fruit was from the mysterious stranger's homeland, and then they assumed that she was from Asia.
I can understand why you assume that. I mean, you know, Jesus Christ.
Well, she shows up, and she's got the small hands, Colonel.
Yeah, those little tiny hands.
Sexy hands.
I like women with small hands, Timmy.
Mm-hmm.
And a good manicure.
Well, that's important.
It is important. You get your French tips on there.
Oh.
And she had her eyebrows. That was on fire, Timmy.
Oh, yeah, her eyebrows were
Don't
on
forget
point.
About the
so
eyebrows.
So Princess Caribou's looking hot.
She's now, basically what the devil strives to be.
Really?
So Elizabeth, you know, the magistrate's wife, she noticed that the young lady had some curious habits, Brandy.
Long hit.
Excuse him while he's vaping. Including an interest in Chinese imagery, sleeping on the floor, and going to the roof and praying every hour.
Now, if you're homeless and you're poor, is sleeping on the floor really a peculiar habit?
Well, but they had a bed for her, and she refused. She also liked to dig dirt from the Royals garden and spread it on their floor in their home. When Mrs. Royal
from the Royal garden?
When she was preparing a meal consisting of flounder, the woman became hysterical, Brandy.
Well, maybe she was vegetarian.
She had to stop preparing the meal, and the woman took the half-cooked fish to their garden and buried it. Your thoughts on that, Brandy?
That seems a bit excessive for a fucking fish, but I've buried more than one goldfish in the backyard. So
I don't think it was a goldfish, but it might have been. I don't have
It doesn't matter if it was a fish. It was a flounder. It wasn't a goldfish. I'm just saying, I've buried fish in the backyard before, so I really can't say much.
The next morning, Mrs. Royale sat down with the young woman, hoping to discover something about her, Brandy. But no one could understand her language, either written or spoken.
Nana's is a hard one to figure out.
Until after some time and great effort, somehow the young woman came to understand what was desired of her, and she pointed to herself and cried, "Caribou, caribou."
Which is buffalo, but go ahead.
It's not a buffalo, it's an elk.
Whatever.
If you would have gone to biology class or whatever
God.
And I slept with the professor, you would know this stuff.
I didn't know she slept with all her professors. That was just economics professors.
Well, she got a college degree, don't she, Timmy?
I think we just make things up as we go along.
That's a good point, Colonel. That's a real good point. When anyone asked her a question, a young lady would repeatedly point with great vigor, almost shout the word caribou, caribou. This kind of reminds me of Oofy
Maybe
Goofy.
She's slow.
Well, the good folks of Almondsbury begin calling the woman Princess Caribou, which makes sense, Brandy.
Because they've given her a promotion.
Well, you know,
there's nothing indicating any of this, but okay.
The woman refused to eat meat or porridge, Brandy. Your thoughts on that?
God damn, there wasn't much left.
She only drank tea and ate raw vegetables. So give her a potato, she's fine.
Ooh, a raw potato. Mm-hmm.
She preferred rice to bread. Well, who doesn't, Colonel? She ate no meat, Colonel, drank only water and tea, and was very fond of Indian curry.
Indian curry?
Yeah.
Oh.
Hmm. To curry favor with her, you could give her curry, Brandy.
To curry favor, Timmy, that's a good one.
She refused a pigeon that was well-dressed.
Was it tux? Is it in a tux?
Pigeons in a tux. No, I think they used to eat pigeons, right? So, do they still eat pigeons?
Yeah. Goddamn, they're a delicacy in some places, Timmy.
Because they eat pigeons on Game of Thrones, don't they?
It's hard to find a good pigeon.
And eat
you
crow,
gotta cook them just right.
A little bit gamey.
But having a live one put in her hands, she cut off its head, which she buried together with the blood under, with its blood under the earth. And then she's like burying things, don't they? And she ate. She then dressed and ate the other part. So she took off the pigeon's head,
and then ate, and then dressed the other part up weird and ate it.
Mm-hmm. The locals gather around, watch her eat, and became transfixed by her behavior, Brandy.
Well, I guess there's no television.
Well, yeah. Goddamn, at any one time, walking around your town.
Right.
At any one time, there would be as many as 2 dozen people observing her. Well, that would get a little annoying, wouldn't it, Brandy?
It does get annoying, Timmy. It does get annoying. People asking you for autographs, just wanting to touch you.
So the paparazzi was probably out for Mrs. Princess Caribou. Whenever someone sought her advice or blessings, she would simply nod her head and repeat her name, Caribou, Caribou.
Why are they seeking this woman's advice when she's got one word?
Well, they think she's this princess from the Far East.
I mean, but she's not telling him anything. It's like seeking advice from fucking Hodor on Game of Thrones. He's got one fucking word that he uses.
Well, same with her. All right. The locals were so grateful to have royalty in their midst.
Right. Well, yes. Duh.
Mr. Royale, however, was still unsure and declared he felt that the woman was a beggar and who should be taken to Bristol and tried for vagrancy. So he's not playing. He thinks she's a fraud. Soon after word got out about the strange visitor, the good people of Almondsbury were so curious and anxious to meet her, she was visited by throngs of people, Brandy. Have you ever been visited by throngs?
Once. It was a long time ago, and I like
been visited by thongs.
She's wore thongs.
Really?
Before.
Snoop Dogg over there? Really?
I'm just saying.
People would line up for miles outside the magistrate's home to have an audience with the local celebrity.
Good Lord.
Your thoughts on that, Brandy?
These are people with a lot of time on their hands.
The peasants need to be a little less bothersome to the celebrity, Timmy.
Well, she's a princess.
That's why I don't like Christmas, Timmy, because I got to go out Christmas shopping. Everybody's like, oh, is that the Colonel? Is that the Colonel? And I try to be.
No, I can imagine it is hard for him, Brandy, to go out in public.
It's not easy. It's just not easy.
People want to touch you, kiss you right on the mouth, Colonel, I bet.
Oh, they do. They do.
Mm-hmm. Hundreds of people.
Can't even get through the Sears store.
Down does Mrs. Colonel get upset when women try to touch you and.
Mrs. Carl,
she generally encourages things like that. Timmy, I'm saying it's good PR or something. I'm not really sure what she's after there.
Hundreds of people visited Princess Caribou each day, Brandy. They brought a variety of gifts, and many brought their children so that they could see a real princess. So they could tell their grandchildren that they saw a real princess, Brandy.
Uh-huh.
You would probably take young Noah to see her, for example.
Noah could give a shit about seeing a princess.
It wasn't long before the city fathers decided to hold a festival to celebrate their good fortune of hosting such a distinguished visitor. A 3-day festival was held in the village of Almondsbury in honor of Princess Caribou. So she's a big deal, Brandy, at this point.
Yeah,
I guess.
The guests of honor presided over all the events, and seemed genuinely delighted, Brandy. Locals swore Princess Caribou was the biggest thing to happen in Almesbury since the Church of St. Mary the Virgin was built and dedicated in 1140 AD. So 600 years, Brandy, she was the biggest thing that happened.
You know, I think I realized what we got going on here, Timmy.
You did?
I thought the devil was just, you know, not engaged in this whole story.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe she might be jealous, too. Because a princess was more popular than her, than the queen of the benevolency.
Well, I mean, the Princess Caribou was the biggest thing to happen in this town 600 years. So,
yeah.
So here's the thing. If I went to some little backwards place in the middle of nowhere and started just yelling out caribou and nanas, I could have a festival too.
Well, yeah, but your hands are not as nice.
No.
Oh, my hands are nice.
You got those big Kareem Abdul-Jabbar hands, palming basketballs and whatnot.
My nails look nice. I'm on it.
The woman was taken
to good eyebrows. I'll give you that one, though.
I do have good eyebrows.
So the magistrate was insistent that this woman was a fraud. So he took her to Bristol to be examined by the mayor and then on to St. Peter's Hospital, which cared for vagrants. When shown her
bed,
when shown her bed for the evening, the princess appeared confused. The stranger appeared not to understand the bed's function. Instead of getting, she got down on the floor to sleep. It was not until a nurse showed her how comfortable the bed was that she lay down on a bed. After she went to the hospital's roof to pray, she laid on the bed and went to sleep. So she still praying on the roof. Brandy, your thoughts on that?
Now closer to God.
James Taylor wrote a song about Princess Caribou.
Up on the roof.
Up on the roof.
Okay, Brandy, tell us what happens next in this tantalizing tale.
Yes, well, Princess Caribou's behavior at the hospital was very odd, to say the least. She became resistant to her doctor's care and caused so many problems for caused a lot of problems for the staff at the hospital.
I would just like to point out, the sentence was, Princess Caribou's behavior at the hospital was odd. Colonel, you've got the script in front of you. Do you see anywhere where I say, at the very least? Is that in there at all?
Could you stick to this? You know what, Devil? If we want you to write scripts, we'll ask you. Don't improvise. Timmy has
Colonel.
Prose.
Do you really want me to read exactly how it's written?
I really need to take my blood pressure medicine because please stick to the script.
Yeah.
Are you is she the writer? Colonel?
No.
Is that William Shakespeare on the other end of this call?
Exactly, Timmy. To be or, you know,
at the very least.
To be or, you know, to not to be, whatever. I don't know. No, they say to be or not to be.
Thank you.
When you're doing Shakespeare, you do Shakespeare.
Thank you, Colonel.
Now do some Shakespeare for us, Devil.
All you have to do is read, talk.
Just sit there, look pretty, and read, goddammit. We only ask two things.
Continue, Brandy.
Are you not? Because I stopped listening. Okay. At the overcrowded,
professionalism.
Dirty hospital, she declined all kinds of food and eventually refused to even look at her doctors. Because that works.
That's odd.
Fascinated and brought various foreigners who tried to decipher her language, but none were successful. A local anthropologist, Conrad Pritchard, proclaimed that Princess Caribou was definitely a member of an ancient Indonesian tribe thousands of miles away from home. Another local expert, Andrew McMichaels, refuted the claim and declared that Princess Caribou was definitely a member of the Yanomami tribe found in the Amazon. The two men started disputing each other's claims and insulting each other. This resulted in a duel, and Professor Pritchard was shot in the groin.
No! That's dirty.
Nothing worse than being shot in the groin. Yeah.
After a week at the hospital, Miss Worrell again intervened and took Princess Caribou to stay at her husband's offices in Bristol, where she remained for 10 days in the care of her husband's housekeeper. Again, troops of foreigners and supposed language experts were brought in to see her without result until at last there was some progress.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
By now, word had spread beyond Almondsbury of the attractive foreign stranger, and curious members of society came as far away as London to visit the woman now known as Princess Caribou. The stranger was being treated like a visiting head of state.
Oh, so she's very important. I think it's exciting. I would love to go visit her if I was there at that point in time.
So I would go. Shaw of Iran at your house.
Mm-hmm. That's a big deal.
After a couple of weeks, Princess Caribou was introduced to a Portuguese sailor, Manuel Inicio, who could apparently understand her language, really. He translated her story. The woman claimed to be Princess Caribou of Javasu, an island in the Indian Ocean. Who had been kidnapped from her home by pirates and held captive on their ship. She claimed to have escaped by jumping overboard into the Bristol Channel and swimming ashore.
That must have been terrifying.
Well, yes. For 10 weeks, Princess Caribou danced exotically for all the magistrate's friends, used a bow and arrow, fenced, prayed to her god on the roof, whom she named Allah Tala. There you go.
That's the big Allah. Allah Shorter, Allah Tala.
Allah, yep. Let's see. And she was swimming naked in the lake for all to see. So just jumping in the lake.
Look at that, Colonel.
Yeah. You know she's all bushy down there, John.
Oh, and you know she's got those hands.
Those delicate hands. Doggy paddling.
Every week, more and more visitors.
Uncalloused hands.
Yeah.
Boarded in to see the exotic lost princess. Princess Caribou duly responded to the attention with increasingly exotic behavior and elaborate language, and also provided the full dramatic narrative of her abduction by pirates from her native Javasu.
Okay.
Princess Caribou agreed to write down examples of her language, an example of which was sent to Oxford for analysis.
And you can see the examples online. They actually have the examples. But go ahead.
Okay. It was returned soon after as being marked as humbug. I guess that's a nice for bullshit.
Yeah. I guess the good folks at Oxford wasn't buying it.
They got words. Undaunted, the princess had her portrait painted and made herself an elaborate traditional Eastern costume, using materials of her choice provided by Miss Worrell. Having become something of a celebrity, she acquired exotic clothing, had her portrait painted again, and even had a ball in Bath held in her honor.
She had a bath ball.
I had a bath bomb.
Yeah. Several hundred people attended the ball. With the help of Manuel.
The Portuguese guy.
Inicio's interpretation. Princess Caribou offered her visitors language lessons for a small fee. Well, yeah.
So this idiot, she's making up this language. This idiot is translating this language. She's teaching it.
After several weeks, she seemed very pleased by her students' progress, although many of them seemed just as confused by the language as they did when she started saying it. Although...
Well, they say the made-up languages are the hardest to learn.
Well, I would think so. Yeah. Although a few believe that she was really a Javanese princess, her authenticity was attested to by another local anthropologist, Dr. Andrew Wilkinson, who identified her language using Edmund Fry's Pantographia.
Yeah, some kind of guide. Yeah.
Yeah, and that the marks on the back of her head were the work of Oriental surgeons. Okay. God. By all accounts, Princess Caribou was having a wonderful and enjoying her celebrity. I read it as written.
Wonderful time, Brandy.
Well, I read it as written, fuckers. By now, newspapers were full of descriptions of Princess Caribou, and she'd become a national figure. When King George III became aware of the story, he told his aides that he would like to meet the princess. But this notoriety was to prove her undoing. A Mrs. Neal, who ran a lodging house in Bristol, read the description of the princess in the Bristol Journal and recognized her immediately. A couple of months earlier, the girl had been a lodger at the house, which she had kept with her daughters, and she'd sometimes entertain them by speaking her own made-up language. When she left the house, she'd been wearing a homemade turban. When confronted... Well,
did they have turban shops? Did she was just...
I think she was just fucking crazy, you know?
Yeah, well... So when she was confronted by her landlady, Princess Caribou had no trouble speaking English. Well, she just gave it up right away.
The gig is up. Yeah.
Yeah. Her ruse, which had gone on for 3 months, was over. It transpired that the self-styled princess was really Mary Wilcox, who came from Withridge in Devon. Sorry. She was no princess, but the daughter of a cobbler.
A daughter of a cobbler, Colonel. That's really an insult when you call someone a daughter of a cobbler, isn't it, Colonel?
Yes.
He's obviously not there.
Right.
But continue, Brandy.
The jig is up for her, it sounds like.
There you go. Okay. And he's back. Apparently, she adopted the disguise in the hope that it would make her more interesting.
Well, it did.
It did, yeah. People followed her around.
Mission accomplished.
The odd marks on Mary's head were scars from a crude wet cupping operation. Doesn't Gwyneth Paltrow do that? A procedure intended to relieve pressure on an overheated brain, in which the back of the head was shaved, the skin scarred with parallel blades, and hot glasses applied to catch the blood.
Brandy will never have to worry about having an overheated brain, you think?
No, it runs on... pretty much neutral.
But you and I, we have...
Yeah, we got to get that cupping done, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Probably every other day.
I'll do it for you if you want.
Continue, Brandy.
After being discovered by Mary Wilcox... Mary Wilcox grew tired of the fame and expressed a wish to go to America. So Mrs. Worrell generously arranged for her passage to Philadelphia, accompanied by chaperones. So Mrs. Warhol is getting her the fuck out of Dodge.
Shit. You know, she's got a free trip to Philadelphia out of the deal. Sure. That's not bad.
The journey, however, was not uneventful. Mary's fame was such that she was popularly linked to one of the great romantic figures of the age, Napoleon, then exiled to St. Helena. It was reported in Felix Farley's Bristol Journey in that Mary Wilcox had gone ashore at St. Helena and met Napoleon, who was said to have found her enchanting.
Yeah. So on her way over to the U.S., they stopped.
Sure, they made a pit stop.
He was in exile. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Mary had sailed for Philadelphia on Sunday, the 28th of June, 1870.
All right, Colonel. Sunday, June 28th, 1870. How you like that? The day of the week in there.
That's researching there.
Thank you,
Colonel. If the devil would have researched like that, she wouldn't have had to sleep with every professor she ever had.
She was in the company of three strictly religious ladies whom Miss Worrell had asked to take care of her. When she arrived in America, she was greeted by an enthusiastic crowd as Princess Caribou. Mary appeared on stage throughout the United States, but was not universally well received. Her performance received scathing reviews. On November 12, 1820, the New York Examiner described her act: "This strange, exotic creature who goes by the name Princess Caribou stands on stage, mumbles gibberish for three quarters of an hour, and then simply walks on stage to the bewilderment of her audience, who leaves the theater 10 cents poorer."
So she just goes out, mumbles,
and leaves. Well, you know, it worked for in England, why not here?
Kind of like this podcast, Colonel.
The question remains, how had this uneducated country girl managed to fool so many people? Some of them highly intelligent academics for so long, and perhaps more importantly, why?
And for 3 months, she had these people fooled. Right.
Miss Worrell asked the editor of Felix Farley's Bristol Journal, John Matthew Gutch, to find out something of the girl's past from Mary herself and from anyone else he could find who knew or had known her. What Gutch found out is perhaps even more interesting than Mary's couple of months fooling people into thinking she was a foreign princess, and was published as a book in August that year, selling very well.
Yeah, so he did research to find out what the backstory was.
Mary's parents were interviewed and corroborated some, but not all, of her own romanticized story of her early life. His father said she always found it difficult to settle down, and every spring and autumn she grew restless. Her father thought that Mary was not quite right in the head, and attributed this to her contracting rheumatic fever at the age of 15, which was when, he said, all of the trouble started. She's 15. Yes.
No. Yeah. That's when she got the fever.
Yeah, but come on.
Got the fever. She got the fever.
Mary Baker.
Fever in the morning, Colonel.
Fever in the afternoon, Timmy.
I know, Brandy, there's been a demand by our audience that Colonel and I sing Midnight Train to Georgia at the next DweebCon.
Oh, we're going to get us some tight, glittery pants, Timmy.
Okay, so reading this is written, this says Mary Baker, but her name is Wilcox. Is that correct? Okay,
yeah, but she gets married later on,
go ahead. Okay, but you'll get mention it. That. So.
I do later on. Go ahead.
Yeah,
Mary Wilcox. She's shifty. She had aliases.
Mary was 26 years old and had been born in 1791 into a very poor family where six of her brothers and sisters had died young. She probably killed them. From the age of 8, she was wool spinning and weaving. All right. And occasionally working on
That's how my dancing has been described, Brandy.
Wool spinning and weaving?
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Later, she worked as a maid in a house in...
Oh, I can bust a move.
I know you can. I know. She was a maid in a house in Exeter, but walked out after 8 weeks because the work was just too hard. She went back home to Witheridge, but found life there unbearable after her taste of the outside world and ran away after a
week. Okay, so she's a little unstable, Brandy.
Right. Well, now she's depressed. And she said she had attempted to hang herself from a tree by her apron strings. What the fuck? But her voice.
She must have been a tiny woman.
Right.
Well, she had tiny hands.
Yeah, that's about all. Yeah. But she heard a voice in her head telling her it was a sin. Oh, okay. But lying's not. She then met a man on the road who felt sorry for her and gave her enough money for 3 nights' lodgings.
Yeah, that callous hands.
Yeah, in the village of Taunton. After Taunton, she went to Bristol, begging along the way, and then decided to walk to London. She got within 30 miles of the city before collapsing, to be given a lift by a wagoner.
Colonel, tell us a little bit what a wagoner does.
A wagoner is a person who drives a wagon, Timmy.
Looky there. Well, I damn.
They got some horses in the front. They're up on a little seat, and it's the old-timey version of a pickup truck, Timmy.
And probably the most famous of a wagoner is the Porter Wagoner.
The Porter Wagoner, yeah.
You're fucking jackasses. All right, so some wagoner, whatever, picks him up. He's got two other girls on there, and he takes him as far as Hyde Park Corner.
Okay.
Here, she again collapses. She gets the vapors a lot.
Yeah.
And the two women, realizing that she is very ill, took her to St. Giles Workhouse Hospital, where she was admitted to the fever ward.
They have a fever ward, Brandy.
No, she got the fever.
That's
she had the fever, Timmy. She
very
had the fever
specialized.
In the morning.
Yeah. And in the afternoon, Colonel.
Yep.
Even around supper time.
Yeah.
After resting a while, Mary met a gentleman who took her under his care.
I bet he did.
The gentleman had taken her to London, she said, but abandoned her after a month.
Mm-hmm. He got her in her pants, Colonel, and he dropped her like a hot potato.
Well, after this,
can I call you a taxi? Can I call you a wagon?
Let's see. Well, after this, after the guy left her, and she went on the town leading a loose life.
Loose life, Colonel.
This landed her a bed at the Magdalen Hospital for aging prostitutes.
Man, that's when you know life has dealt you a blow, Colonel, when you end up at the Magdalen Hospital for aging prostitutes.
When you know your better days are behind you, Timmy.
I wonder if they have like a syphilis ward. She was accepted to the home and was given work as a housemaid. But a few weeks later, she admitted that she'd never been a prostitute. She was just slutty. And she needed.
She was just aging. She's 26 years old.
Yeah.
Well, things were different back then. I mean, women grew penises by 28.
I guess they took a look at her and thought she had a pretty hard life. And
The officials.
Let's just take you to the hospital for the aging process.
The old whore home.
Yeah. Let's see. Officials asked her about living relations. Her father was dead, she told them. And if they asked her any more about her family, she'd hang herself.
Oh. You don't know what visiting hours is like at the home for aging prostitutes.
I bet they only have red lights. The records of Magdalen Hospital show her to have been very well behaved during her stay, though very eccentric and given to depression and restlessness. This latter was partially true, and she left the hospital in July. According to Mary's story, the next thing she did was set off back home to Withridge, disguised as a man because of the dangers of walking across Hunslow alone.
Yeah, that's smart, Brandy. Yeah.
Sure. She then crossed Salisbury Plain, where, according to her, she was kidnapped by highwaymen.
Oh, the fucking highwaymen.
Oh, no, not them.
Took back to their camp. Who was in the highwaymen?
Mm-hmm. What?
Wasn't that band?
Yeah, there was a band, but highwaymen were like thieves or bandits or whatever.
I know what they're talking about here. I'm asking that.
There was that song "Highwaymen" by Johnny Cash.
Johnny Cash, Chris Christopherson, and Waylon Jennings.
Yeah.
Where are we? Okay. And they kidnapped her. Jennings.
No, Waylon Jennings didn't kidnap her. And come on, don't be silly.
Yeah.
No, it's crazy. When they discovered that she was a girl, they were ready to shoot her.
As a police, damn right.
Police spy. They thought she was an informant, but she begged for her life and was released.
She probably had to give him a BJ, wouldn't you think, Colonel?
No, because apparently they just don't do that to the women that they do kidnap.
But she had those nice hands, man.
She did. She did.
She eventually arrived home in August of 1813. Her mother found her job working for a leather worker and tanner in Crediton, a few miles from her village.
Colonel, have you ever did leather work in your life?
I've done some tanning. Yes, I have.
He's done some tanning.
I'm sure he has.
I like to, you know how people do those little embroidery things on just regular, you know, the stuff with the holes in it. What do you call that? Embroidery. I don't know. You know, where you put the little sayings like, you know, go fuck yourself or whatever, and you put them on a little tapestry. What's that called, devil? You're a woman. You should know this stuff.
Do you know what he's talking about?
Wealth of knowledge. Hmm. On this subject.
Well, I used to do that on leather, Timmy. I just poke a needle.
You embroidered. Leather. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. You did with leather. Jeez. Okay.
All right. After 3 months.
I bet Randy's had some experience with leather, Colonel.
Oh, you know she has with the assless chaps and the ball gag and the gimp mask. And
Your comments, Randy, if any.
You fucking idiots. All right. So she left. She objected to having to carry all of the hides.
Well, I don't blame her, Colonel. You know, this is a young lady here. She's 26 years old. She shouldn't be carrying all the hides.
Well, she's already a washed up prostitute.
But on the back side, you know, on the other side, you just came from a home for aging prostitutes. So, I mean, you don't have a lot going for you, Brandy. I mean, you know, they're asking you to carry a few hides.
Do you put that on a resume?
Well, yeah, you're a hide carrier. No, you don't put the fact that you were in a hospital for aging
prostitutes. But she worked there. I mean, do you put that on there?
I would stay away from it. Your thoughts, Colonel?
I would not carry hide nor head, Timmy.
Thank you, Colonel. Of course not.
After a couple of other jobs, she headed back to London where she worked for a fishmonger.
Mm. Mary claimed nothing worse than a fishmonger.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mary claimed that while working there.
She went from being a whoremonger to a fishmonger.
I think she could go back and hook up with the Wagoneer myself. But
you know. That while working there in the spring of 1814, she'd had a love affair with a gentleman called Baker.
That's where the name Baker comes in.
There we go. Well, you know.
Well, you think that he wouldn't have nothing to do with her after she was banged by all the highwaymen and wagoners in the whole fucking country.
Yeah. And then speaking that fucked up language.
Yeah.
Well.
And spend time in a hospital for aging prostitutes.
Maybe he was no prize catch.
You don't think Mr. Baker was?
Yeah, maybe he was just happy to have somebody that put up with his shit.
And carried his hides, let's face it.
Well, No, he wasn't the leather guy.
No, but maybe he had his own hides.
Well, Mr. Baker did, Timmy.
He may be bringing some hides to the table. You don't know.
After 2 months, Timmy, after he tested the wares for 2 months.
Mm-hmm. They were married.
They were married. Mm-hmm. And lived together in London. And possibly at Battle near Hastings.
Nice. Then
her husband was sent back to London where he sailed to Calais. Promising to bring her to France. But that was the last she ever heard of him.
He got out of fucking Dodge, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, baby, I'm going to send for you just as soon as I can. Get on my feet, Brandy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he went out for a ride, and he never came back to me.
Mm-hmm. That's what Dave's going to do.
Oh, yeah, that's what. Then here comes Lanny. Hello, Brandy.
Yeah.
Hello, Brandy. Lanny. It's me, Lanny.
Hey, Willie. He's spraying. He's got the breast spray. What is it? Bianca or whatever? Lanny's spraying his breast. He's putting his breast spray in, sliding up the Brandy.
Yeah. Well,
with his greasy hair.
One arm.
he's got the acne. He's got his Pet Boy shirt on.
Yeah, greasy. Got pizza sauce on the front. Well, anyway. Whether any of this is true remains open to question, but when Mary returned to London by the beginning of 1816, she was pregnant, Timmy.
Mm, she was with child, Brandy.
She was with child. Yep,
that's what that means.
Now, she managed to get a job working behind the bar in a pub run by Mrs. Clark, where she called herself Hannah, and developed a reputation for telling strange stories. Mm. Now, the baby was born in February 1816, where remains a mystery. He was christened John Wilcox, but Mary called him John Edward Francis Baker. Now, as there was no father present for support, and Mary had no money.
What's going on?
I had to sneeze. Timmy, I apologize.
That's okay.
My allergies are getting the best of me this Christmas season, Timmy.
I'm sorry to hear that, Colonel.
So this baby was unsupported, Timmy. No money.
Oh. Your thoughts on that, Brandy?
That's bullshit.
Mr. Baker skipped out of town. Skipped a country. Well,
not surprising.
They were sent to St. Mary's Workhouse. Now, who names a work? What kind of fucked up saint is the patron saint of workhouses? I don't have my medallion on my neck. Let's pray to St. Mary so we can all get thrown in the poorhouse.
Wonder if the house for aging prostitutes had a patron saint.
They have that reciprocity kind of thing where they just pray people back and forth.
Ah, I see.
Well, at the workhouse, she was persuaded to give the child to the Foundling Hospital. But to do this, she had to give references. Mm-hmm. Personal details that she did not want it. Something she was never happy doing, Timmy. Mm-hmm. And say why she could not support the child herself. The few facts she subsequently provided are probably as close to the truth as she ever came. She gave her name as Mary Wilcox. She was unmarried, age 25. She's moving backwards. She's Benjamin Buttons here. And that the father of the child was John Baker, a bricklayer from Exeter. In a more detailed statement given later at the hospital, she said they'd lived together for 9 months where he just got the milk instead of buying the cow, Timmy.
Your thoughts on that, Brandy?
Well, you know, whatever works for you.
They lived in Exeter. And then he deserted her, the rat bastard. Or maybe 9 months was enough. Maybe she just nagged him.
Well, the man is, he's obviously a cad, Colonel.
He is a cad. Mm-hmm. So she left the hospital. She found employment again and then visited the child at the Foundling Hospital every Monday, Timmy, like clockwork. Mm-hmm. Until on the 27th of October, the poor child died, Timmy. Now, at this time, she was working for a family called Starling. And Miss Starling remembered her telling them that the child had died at her mother's house. And she said Mary was in excellent service, but out of a goddamn mind. That's what she said. Out of a goddamn
mind. I can't believe that. Yeah.
She described her behavior as eccentric and unusual. Always telling the children frightening stories about gypsies and gypsies and murder and mayhem and fires and torture and whatnot.
What's your thoughts on gypsies, Colonel? Because, you know, we have a lot of gypsies listen to our podcast.
I don't mind the gypsies. It's the tramps and thieves I don't like, Timmy.
I see.
And then she had been born in the East Indies, the baby born in Philadelphia. She was eventually sacked in November for setting fire to the beds, Timmy.
That will do it, Brandy, if you're a domestic helper and you set fire to the beds. Mm-hmm. Employers frown on that sort of thing,
Yeah,
Brandy.
Some people just want you to change your sheets, but she just said, fuck it.
Catching them on fire. Gets out her Bic lighter.
We don't know what these freaks were doing there either.
That is how you leave the job.
It is.
Burn the goddamn house down.
Fuck out. Yep.
Yeah. I don't think she wants to put that job on her resume, Brandy.
She spent Christmas of 1816 in France, but she returned to Devon in February 1817 by coach, Timmy. Not by wagoneer this time. Coach travel was expensive. So she either got money from somewhere or she was putting those soft, uncalloused hands to use, Timmy. So she told her parents that the baby had died, and was coming to say goodbye before she sailed to the Indies. And it was about after 10 days at home, she sent a trunk on ahead and set off for Bristol, Timmy, to leave the Indies. Rather than go to Bristol, Timmy, you know what she ended up doing?
What did she do, Colonel?
Hitchhiking and begging on the road to Plymouth, Timmy.
To Plymouth, Brandy.
And then staying with
Nothing good happens in gypsies.
Yeah. She left the gypsies and went back to Exeter to Bristol and arrived in March of 1817. But for some reason, She was now looking for a ship to take her to Philadelphia and found she could travel steerage. Now, you know what steerage means? Though, explain steerage to her, Timmy.
Well, Brandy, that means if you have no money, steerage is like the poorest accommodations you can expect.
Yeah. 5 guineas. That's all.
Five guineas?
Which, yeah, she would have to try and raise that. She found lodgings, sharing a room with a young Jewish girl named Eleanor in a respectable house belonging to a Mrs. Neal. The two girls went out begging in the streets together.
Yeah, now this is the Mrs. Neal that ratted her out. Yeah. So they went out begging in the streets, okay.
After noticing the attention that the French lace makers from Normandy received wearing high lace headdresses, Eleanor persuaded Mary to use her black shawl as a turban to make her look more interesting.
Well,
they tried this for a while, but Mary was restless again, left Bristol, still pretending to be French and using her own made-up language, begging at various places along the road to Gloucester. What is that town?
Gloucester.
I've been there before, but I can't pronounce it. The disguise proved successful until she met someone who could actually speak French.
Yeah, that'll fuck you up every time.
Well, usually all you got to do is put le in front of everything. Le bread. Le car. That's all you got to do. It's French.
I see.
This disguise proved successful until she met someone, again, who could speak French again. She was like some bitch. Then she moved to Spanish. Well, she just put L in front of everything. So it was now that she met the wheelwright's son who helped to expose her later. He was going to expose her now and expose her later. He exposed himself and then exposed her later.
He sent her a dick pic.
He did. Or at least
Brandy, have you ever received a dick pic?
Yes.
Have you really? I went to see back in the day. You had to roll them up and then put a little wax stamp seal on them and then have your courier send them out to a woman.
That's what I'm wondering, is if it was, you know, a drawing.
Well, that's what I'm assuming. Or was, you know, carved into.
Have you been impressed? Brandy, have you been impressed with the dick pics you have received?
Let me tell you something, just for everybody out there. No woman is ever impressed by a dick pic.
Oh, I beg to differ. I beg to differ.
For all you want.
Now,
apparently the Mrs. Colonel has been impressed.
Let's see. Yeah, they weren't. Unfortunately, they weren't mine, Timmy. But spoke to him and various other people they met on the road in her strange language.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all eager to help her. When she arrived at the pub speaking her lingo, the landlady said, "What the fuck are you talking about?" and then asked her in for a drink. Soon the whole pub was offering her food and drink, but she refused. She slipped away, headed on roads toward Clifton, still accompanied by the wheelwright's son.
Yeah, he's sniffing around. He's trying to get laid.
Oh, yeah. He's going to try to expose her. Mm-hmm. Soon after, they met two men, one of whom spoke perfect Spanish. So Mary was forced to speak to him in her language, which, amazingly, he claimed to understand his Spanish. Translating what she said and saying that her mother and father were following her along the road.
So this guy's full of shit, too.
Yeah. Now, for this, it was an important lesson to Mary on how to use other people's expertise. Now, Mary grows tired of the wheelwright's son. And after letting him buy her a steak and a cup of tea at a pub on the way to Bristol, managed to lose him along the way. She slipped him.
Yeah.
She
got that steak and cup of tea, though.
She did. Yeah. It was at the Red Lobster.
Stifting, Brandy.
She did before you could stiff her.
Red Lobster.
Well, she's not stupid. You get the food first.
Duh. Sure, well. She stayed the night in lodgings and the next morning started out on the road to Gloucester. Once again, assuming her character as she headed toward the village of Almondsbury and famous Princess Caribou.
Mm-hmm.
Despite making fools of everyone she encountered as Princess Caribou, there didn't seem to be any hard feelings. After a few years touring the United States as Princess Caribou, Mary had a strong desire to return to England and to give up show business. She was a fucking Greta Garbo of bombs, is what she was.
Yeah, well, she got on stage. She mumbled incoherently, and pretty much
what we do on live shows, Timmy.
You see our audience like clapping, like not sure if they should clap.
Yeah,
looking is this around. Where we clap?
Well, she made one last appearance as Princess Caribou in a London gallery, where she charged visitors a shilling to see her.
Would you pay a shilling to see her, Brandy?
Probably not.
The fake princess, much like the fake queen we have on this show, then returned to Bristol and married Robert Baker, 10 years her senior, and set up business in Bedminster.
She has daddy issues, Brandy.
She does.
She's right up your alley.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what she sold, Timmy?
What did she sell?
Leeches, an important medical commodity.
They're fucking golden in their leeches, Colonel.
There was. One of her clients was the Bristol Infirmary.
That's when they Marianne. Used to bleed people. Have you ever been bled, Brandy?
Oh, Timmy, I'm bled every day. Every day. Bled just a little bit at a time, Timmy. But then she finally did have a daughter, Marianne, around 1829, which would have made her, I don't know, about almost 30 years old, getting long in the tooth for a woman of that time, Timmy.
Yeah, I bet her hands wasn't so uncalloused by that
point. Yeah, they were starting to get calloused by then, yeah. Mm-hmm. When Mary Baker died in 1864, Timmy, at the age of 75.
She lived a long life.
She was buried in an unmarked grave in Hebron Churchyard in Southville. Her daughter, Mary Ann, carried on the business of selling leeches instead of buying her mama a headstone. The war does that.
Well, we're assuming that, and this is early 19th century, so we're assuming Mary is dead now as well, Brandy, and the daughter.
Yeah.
And then I read that they had, this little town has a festival, and they dedicated a statue to Mary, or a plaque to Mary, in their courtyard. Your thoughts on that, Brandy? Your thoughts? You okay?
I'm right here.
What? Right. Your thoughts, your final thoughts on Mary Wilcox, better known as Princess Caribou.
She was not a good person.
Why do you say that? She was a nice person.
Yeah, she was a nice person. God, you're judgmental.
Do you have something against aging prostitutes?
No, I don't have anything against aging prostitutes.
Yeah, sounds like you're being a little judgmental on aging prostitutes. What's your thoughts, Colonel? Final thoughts on Princess Caribou?
Wait a minute.
Caribou?
My thought is she took people's money fraudulently.
Not much. She took a steak now and again, that's all.
And a cup of tea.
People were paying her for bullshit language lessons.
Well, they wanted to learn.
Yeah.
They wanted to learn what? They weren't learning shit.
Colonel, your final thoughts on Mary Wilcox, better known as Princess Caribou.
I thought she was an entrepreneurial young lady, Timmy.
See, Brandy.
I admired her.
You know, here's the thing. It's like the moon. Some people see the dark side of the moon.
Yeah.
Some people see the bright side of it. You see, you're a cup half full kind of guy, Colonel.
I am.
That's what he...
Nothing if not positive, Timmy.
Yeah. And Brandy is the yin to your yang.
She's the darkness, Timmy. She's the darkness to my light.
What I love is that he's the cup half full kind of guy, but whenever you ask him, how you doing, Colonel? Well, I'm not good.
Seeing how she is, Colonel, she constantly negative.
Has to say bad things about me. Yeah. One day it'll all be okay, Devil. It'll be okay. You'll get the therapy you need. And tell us what happened to you. What's your backstory that makes you this mean, Devil?
Would you like to tell us, Brandy?
I've got two younger brothers and was raised, you know, to beat the shit out of them. So I got nothing. I'm good.
Do you have a Christmas message for our listeners, Brandy?
You know what? Happy holidays, Merry Christmas, and all of that. Everybody,
you know, hug your loved ones while you get to see them, even if you don't like them, because much like Chuck, next year they may not be around.
Colonel, do you have any Christmas message? I know that you will probably do something on Christmas Eve at midnight. You'll broadcast your message to all corners of the world.
Much like the Pope. Will, Timmy. Mm-hmm. Much like the Pope. I would just like to say, Im lex egum hoc.
What does that mean, Colonel, in English?
What, Timmy, the lady that we just did the story
it's
on,
made
that
up
means Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Yes.
That's in her language, Timmy.
I see. That's very good. You didn't know he spoke gibberish, did you, Brent?
No, I was well aware he spoke gibberish.
Let's give a shout-out to our Patreon supporters, shall we? We would like to thank all of the fine people who support us on Patreon. If you would like to support us on Patreon, please go to patreon.com/historydweebs, where you can give a little, you can give a lot, or
just a wee little bit to me.
Yeah, let's go through these names. We really, really appreciate everyone who contributes. Jim Seabright, Andrew Skamal, Tommy Lane, Jason Dykes, Terry Stratford, of course, Malachi, Brandy McBride, Jennifer Savoda, Pear, that's Pear, right? He told me, he corrected me, I think, last time. Maggie Glover, Gracie's mom, Erica Kinney, Hi Ro, The Comeback Podcast, LK Bar Anots, I think I'm screwed it up, Reen, Marissa Albanese, our good friend and someone we miss dearly, Bridget Clavey, Phyllis Munson, Jennifer Riker Smith, Stephen Potts, Anna Garrett, Ben, your Ursula, also Lenick, our good friends Clark and Diane Trowbridge, Beth Ann Wallen, Michelle Johns, Margaret McDonald, Aaron Turner, Jess, Leanne Flanagan, and who, by the way, Colonel, you know they don't say garbage over there. You know what they say? Rubbish, Colonel.
Rubbish. Rubbish.
I don't like that. I don't like rubbish. It's garbage, right, Brandy?
I think it takes the hard edge off garbage to me. They don't like to make garbage feel bad.
Oh, I see. They're sensitive.
So they dress
there.
It up, yeah, a little bit.
I got you. Julia Rodriguez.
It's the difference between saying escort and whore, Timmy.
I see. Mike
garbage
Sadler.
Garbage.
Jamie Dent, our good friend. Tyrone. Marsha Boris. Stacy Alsop. Jody and Sean Wells. Amber Anderson. Of course, Ben and Rosanna from They Walk Among Us, who just came back from France. Lorna Violet, Michael Deo, Kelly Charette, Karen Russell Widener, and we have more, Brandy, more wonderful people who support us on Patreon. We have Callie Jones, Colonel, the lovely Callie Jones, Lauren Meredith, Jessica Greeno, Mike Brown, our good friend with the Pleasing Terrors podcast.
You know what I think we should do, Timmy?
What?
I think we should all kick in. I think we should do another GoFundMe.
For
just to raise a few bucks to get a Cali cam.
A Cali cam. So she can, Cali Jones could walk around. We could see her world. Get some
we could see, I would
world.
Like to see Cali's day every single day.
Yeah.
Just strap, you know, those things you strap around your head like a, mm-hmm, you know, like,
yeah,
a go cam. Get a Cali cam.
I'm not sure she would wear that, but we could ask her.
But you know, be hysterical, Timmy.
Our good friend Sarah Bloom and the lovely Amber Krupp. We're thinking about you, Amber. Amber is going through a rough Christmas, but we're thinking about you, Amber. Laura O'Reilly, Christine Bourgeois, Kimberly Cameron, Elise, History Goes Bump, Amber Trevino, Annette Petray, Lise, Lara Lopes, our good friend Alicia and Chip Mincy, Marquia Smith, Jeff and Don Chestnut, Andrew Happ, Karen Barnes, Rachel Flynn, Shirley Strapp, Todd Long, Melissa Montoya, Maja, Karen, our good friend Karen Garrett, Colonel, your co-host on Rants and Reasons, Carol Elise, Christian Malakinski, Adams McWaters, Rants and Reason podcast with our good friend the Colonel here, Paula Kimes, The Vanish podcast, Canadian True Crime with our good friend Christy Lee, the Insight Podcast, our good friend Charlie, and Ali, Angela Santos, Lydia Wasson Fisher, Kim Stroop, Nicole Adams, better known as Mistress Vader, Ron Montesero, Tracy Smith, Bridget Bernard, Stacy, Cheryl LeBlanc Weldon, Veronica Marino. We also would like to thank Chris Lane, Alexandria, Elaine Baker, Vivi, Mark and She, Amanda Lupus, Shannon Arnold, Kimberly Smith, Robin Sherrard, Ruth Keith Whitfield, Casey Kitchens, our good buddy Nick Johnson, Natasha Burgess, Julie Bitten, Patty Schmidt, the lovely, lovely Lady Beverly. We wish you a merry, merry Christmas, Lady Beverly. Rudy,
yes, we do.
Rudy, the Wonder Dog, who we understand is spending the Christmas holiday with the Colonel. And my mom.
Well, he's distributing gifts, Timmy.
Is he?
To the homeless.
I thought maybe he would be going home for Christmas, but he's staying there with you.
He's staying here with me, yeah, this year.
Okay. And my mom, Dottie Scott.
Love it. Now, are you spending Christmas with Dottie, Timmy?
Yes, I will spend Christmas with...
We'll give Dottie a hug for all of us.
I will do that. We would like to thank all of you for listening. It's been another wonderful year, and we truly appreciate you listening, and we hope everyone have a very Merry Christmas. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time on History Dweebs. Bye, everyone.
Good day.
Bye-bye.
Done?
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.